Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou. forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
What's your most disturbing, scary, or creepy true story? Story one. I was outside playing with friends one afternoon, and we were around 9 or 10 years old. We lived in a quiet area. As we were playing, we noticed a man in a truck drive by over and over again. Each time he passed my friend's yard, he drove slowly. We then realized that this man was recording us with one of those old handheld recorders. It frightened us, so we ran inside their house and called his mom. She told them they needed to stay inside and that I should go home. I tried explaining that my mom was not home at the moment, but she still made me leave. I lived about 1 or 2 miles down the road. I had never run so fast in my life. I was terrified that the man was going to find me as I ran back home. When my mom found out what happened, she was very angry that my friend's mom had not allowed me to stay at their house until she could come pick me up. Story 2. I had been living in my first apartment alone for maybe 2 weeks. It was a basement apartment, which meant cheap, and the windows were right at ground level so you could see legs and shoes walk by. There were 2 bedrooms. I slept in one with the blinds closed, but the other room's window had some water damage, so I kept the blinds all the way up to let it dry out before maintenance came. That room had nothing in it but spare boxes from moving in. One night I was asleep and then suddenly completely awake and alert. Every fiber of my being on edge. I looked at my phone and saw it was around 4 in the morning. I lay in bed for a minute before I turned toward my closed window and saw it. A large dark shadow of a person with a flashlight trying to see into my bedroom. I instantly panicked. I quietly grabbed a small hunting knee knife and carefully moved to the hall so I could see into the other bedroom. The one whose window coverings were wide open. As I peeked around the corner, the person was scanning the floor of my bedroom methodically with the flashlight. They were big, had on heavy boots, and had keys that jingled. At this point, as a single woman alone in a terrible apartment, I thought this was it. I was completely prepared to take my little hunting knife and defend myself. My adrenaline was sky high. At that moment, my phone buzzed and I got a text from a friend on the police force who literally asked, "What is going on at your apartment?" I thought, yes, this is a bad guy. He is peering in my windows and is going to break in any second now. But then he went away. I did not hear from my police friend after I texted him back. I decided to go lie down on my bed and just wait to see what happened next. Not 5 minutes after lying down, someone knocked on my door with incredible force. The panic mounted again. I had no peephole, no safety chain, just a deadbolt. At the top of my voice, in case it was someone dangerous and I wanted to wake people up, I yelled, "Who is it?" I heard a meek voice reply that it was the police. My first thought was that this was a clever plan to get a girl to open her apartment door. I stood there silently before I heard the voice say again that I was not in trouble. I opened the door just a little, ready to slam it shut, and saw two police officers, one backed away from the door and one up the steps. They must have seen my tiny little knife or something. They proceeded to apologize for scaring me, explaining that they were the ones looking in my windows. I yelled at them and possibly cried a little as the adrenaline finally broke. I got the whole story from my friend the next day. It turned out a fellow resident of the apartment complex had gotten drunk, lost his keys, and broken into his own apartment to go to bed. They had thought it was mine and were confused by the lack of broken windows. I was terrified at the time, but now it feels like a good story to tell. Story 3. In third grade, I had this short teacher named Mrs. Todd. She was always very nice to me in class. She would call on me to do the fun activities first, compliment me whenever I did something, and was generally very positive toward me. At the time, I thought she was perhaps my favorite person in the world. I even remember telling my mother about how much I love Mrs. Todd. One day, I sat down at my desk and opened it up to put my things inside, when to my shock, I saw that there was a Victoria's Secret magazine sitting in the pullout drawer. The kid sitting next to me noticed how surprised I was, and we started talking about how it might have gotten there. Almost immediately, Mrs. Todd walked up and asked, "What have you got there?" I was confused and told her it was sitting in my desk when I got there that morning. She looked at me and told me that the kid sitting next to me must have put it there. She kept repeating that statement over and over again to both him and me until I finally admitted that I guessed he could have put it there. A few days later, she approached me after class to tell me about a special field trip I could go on if I kept doing well in class. It would be a trip with just her and me to the Gulf of Mexico for the weekend. I remember being really excited about it at the time. However, suddenly she was replaced at the school, and we got a new teacher who did not like me as much. I was heartbroken then. It was not until many years later that I realized how disturbing that situation actually was. It still scares me thinking about it. Story 4. This happened recently. It was midnight, and I was at the train station waiting for my train to arrive. There was this really tall man walking my way carrying a suitcase. As he came closer, I noticed he was struggling to carry it, as it looked very heavy, and oddly enough, it was leaking some sort of liquid. It was not water, but something thicker. As he approached, he ordered me to take the bag. The tone of his voice was a little aggressive, and he did not sound sober. Looking closer at him, I noticed he was covered in dirt up to his face and had cuts on his forearms. I said sorry, and struck for words, I began walking away. My train started to arrive, and the man followed me, saying things I could not quite understand. I hopped on the train, the door shut, and he stood outside pointing at me, yelling more gibberish. As the train slowly departed, he suddenly punched the window in frustration with his eyes locked on me. Relieved to be on the train, I noticed fellow commuters staring at me, puzzled by all the commotion between me and that man. It really creeped me out. Story 5. This was a few months after I had moved into my house. I had a long weekend and was at home just doing some cleaning and cooking. While my food was in the oven, I decided to take a quick shower. I was drying off when I heard the beep, 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 beep sound of my oven timer, letting me know it was time to take the food out. I wrapped myself in a towel and went into the kitchen. I got the food out, started some sides, and then went back to clean up in the bathroom and get dressed. When I walked back into the kitchen, I noticed that there was a small blood splatter on my white tiled floor. Naturally, I panicked. I turned around and walked straight out of the house because my mind was instantly filled with thoughts of someone breaking in, getting injured on the broken glass of a window, and then hiding somewhere in my house waiting to hurt me when I least expected it. I called my boyfriend to tell him that I thought someone was in my house or that something strange had happened. He was at work and could not come, so I called my neighbor, told her the situation, and asked her to please come over for a while. She agreed that the blood spot was very strange, and together we grabbed knives and slowly opened the doors to the extra bedrooms and closets. No one was there. At that point, I became convinced someone had to be hiding in the basement. I was terrified because my basement is huge and very creepy. We went down, braced for the worst, but there was nothing there but boxes and spiders. After not finding or hearing anything strange, I calmed down. My neighbor left, and I cleaned up the blood. I told my boyfriend I was fine, and tried to go about having a normal day, but I could not stop thinking about it. I knew I had not imagined the blood on my floor. It was really there. How did it get there? Was someone dangerous nearby? Or maybe an animal had hurt itself? A few hours later, I used the bathroom and realized I had started my period. I felt embarrassed when I connected the dots and realized that when I squatted down to take my food out of the oven, I must have dropped a bit of blood onto the floor without noticing. Story 6. When I was 4 years old, my father, stepmother, and baby brother all died in a highway collision with a semi-truck. They had parked on the side of Highway 84 in West Texas, between Lubbock and Abilene. They stopped to check on the baby, who was having a fit. The semi-driver had been driving over his hours and veered onto the shoulder, hitting their car while going downhill at about 70 miles per hour as they sat stationary. No one but the semi-driver survived the damage and fire that followed. Being four, I had not been around my father much since my parents split, so I do not have any recollection of him at all. But I ended up attending Texas Tech in Lubbock, which meant I often drove past the same spot on my way to and from Dallas-Fort Worth to Lubbock. I decided to research the incident and found an article written by someone who had witnessed the accident and called for help. They lived in a house near the spot and, at least when the article was written, they described seeing the young family, my family, from the crash walking along the side of the highway, continuing their journey but never getting any closer to their destination. Sadly enough, they had been traveling from Albuquerque to Houston to pick me up for a few months. I was at a loss when I found the story. I broke down, which felt strange because I never really knew this person, and yet they were a part of me. I attempted to find the exact spot of the accident by asking some locals, who surprisingly remembered the incident from the late 1990s. I was able to find the approximate location, and I took a few moments of...
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
Silence there, just to show respect. It remains one of the stranger and more haunting stories of my life. Story 7. I was about 12 or 13 years old when this happened. One evening, I was walking to my psychiatrist for my weekly appointment. It was about a half-hour walk and after dark. I enjoyed walking then, especially after dark, when things were quiet and no one else was around. I did not live in a dangerous neighborhood, and my walk did not take me through any dangerous areas. As I was about halfway to my destination, a Cadillac came driving down the street. Several people, both male and female, stuck themselves halfway out of the windows, taunting and jeering at me as they passed. They looked like they were in their late teens or early 20s. I ignored them and kept walking. About a minute later, the same car came down the street again, and again they shouted things at me. I still ignored them, but another minute passed and they circled around again. At that point, I started to worry. They were deliberately circling the block, focusing on me. As soon as they turned a corner and were out of sight, I ducked behind some bushes in someone's front yard and waited. The car came down the street again, and this time, not seeing me, they passed by quietly and turned the corner. I thought they assumed I had gone inside one of the houses. Believing they had left, I left my hiding place and continued walking. That was a mistake. I soon heard the car approaching again. They spotted me and started yelling once more. They turned the corner, and I ran toward my destination. But I knew I would not get far before they caught up. So I ducked behind another set of bushes in front of an apartment building, determined to stay hidden until they gave up. I had only been there about 30 seconds when a man came out of the apartment, asking what I was doing hiding in his bushes. At first, he probably thought I was a burglar, but I quickly explained that I was on my way to my psychiatrist and was being harassed and followed by people in a car. He could see how scared I was and believed me immediately. Just then, the car pulled up at the curb in front of us. You want or no? They looked at me and the man, who was in his late 30s or early 40s, strong and tough looking. He asked me if I knew them, and I told him I had no idea who they were. Then three people approached from the other direction on foot. That explained why the car had looked less full. Their plan was to trap me between them and the car. But when they saw me standing with this tough-looking man, they changed course, got back into the car, and drove off. The man offered to let me wait with him a while longer or even come inside his apartment until it was safe. I felt it was over, so I thanked him but declined, hoping I had not made a mistake. Thankfully, I never saw the car or those people again. I made it to my psychiatrist's office and told him everything. He insisted on calling the police, who came and took a report. That was the last I heard of it. On my way home, I took different side streets instead of the same route. I never saw that car or those people again. Looking back, if I had not hidden in those bushes, I might have walked right into their trap, and I am not sure what would have happened to me. Story 8. My sister and I lived in a haunted house in Thailand when I was 10 years old. We shared a room, and there was a Jack and Jill bathroom separating another empty room. Back then, as now, household help was inexpensive, so we had a maid. She would always yell at us for leaving the ceiling fan on in that room, but we never went in there. The room was upstairs, and when we were downstairs, we would hear the sound of kids running, bouncing balls, and laughing inside. One night, before all of these strange noises started, my sister and I had a friend come sleep over. We made blanket tents in the empty room, but there was a large armoire in there. When the lights were off and we were just chatting, we heard scratches on the wall and froze. Suddenly, the armoire doors squeaked open, and we all bolted out of the room. It was the scariest thing ever. Later, we found out that behind our backyard fence was a swamp, and local people told us that, tragically, many abandoned babies had been left there over the years. Story 9. This story happened at my old house in Toronto. Three of us lived on the main floor of a house, and a stranger lived in the basement. We did not know much about the guy in the basement, except that he was a big gamer and smoked a lot of marijuana. Almost every night I could hear him coughing as if he were about to collapse. I realized that this noise was not coming from directly beneath my room, but from a spot under the garage. My roommate and I went into the garage, jumped up and down, and sure enough, we could hear the hollow sound of a hidden room below. Eventually, this guy decided to move out, and we moved a friend into the basement. It was our first time seeing it, and I was excited to finally check out the mysterious room under the garage. Our friend took us into the laundry room, which was under my room, and there we discovered a creepy little red door that led to a cement chamber filled with trash and old furniture. It looked like a dungeon. This was where the man had been smoking every day. The air was full of mold, and it seemed dangerous even to breathe. Our friend did not understand our curiosity about the hidden room. He was angry at the state of the basement itself. I was surprised since it looked like the other tenant had just moved out, and our friend moved in right after, with no time to clean. But then my friend told me the guy had already been gone for 2 weeks and nobody had touched the place. I thought about this for a moment and got chills down my spine. For those 2 weeks after he had left, I could still hear the horrible coughing coming from that creepy room. Story 10. This happened just a few years ago, when I was still involved in a trade many people would look down on. I was young and desperate, and I figured if I was good at something and enjoyed it, I may as well make money from it. I never had many problems with my clients, partly because I was attentive and polite to the extreme, but also because I was tall, strong, and could be intimidating if needed. This is one of the darkest transactions I ever had. I only agreed to it once, and only because the gentleman I met was extremely persuasive. I suspect he put something in my drink or food, because I felt unusually intense that time. Normally, you are not supposed to eat or drink anything when in a stranger's house, but he came highly recommended by a friend, so I felt safe. When we entered his bedroom, I noticed plastic sheets on the bed and floor. At first, I assumed he was overly cautious about keeping oils or lotion from staining his furniture. Then he brought out a large wooden box and placed it on a table beside the bed, between some candles. When I undressed him for the massage, I noticed many scars across his torso, arms, and legs. I assumed this was why he offered to pay more than usual. The massage went on for an hour. At the end, I thought I knew what he wanted, but instead he opened the box, revealed shiny tools, and explained what he truly desired. That night, I was persuaded into something I had never done before. It was the only time I ever engaged in such extreme play, and it left me deeply conflicted. On one hand, I wanted to run away. On the other, his timing and persuasion made me stay. It awakened something in me I did not want to acknowledge. In the end, I was very generously paid, but I left shaken. Shortly after, I moved to another city. A few months later, my friend contacted me again with new offers from the same gentleman, including promises of travel and large sums of money. As tempting as it was, I trusted my instincts, felt something very wrong about it, and firmly refused. Eventually, the offers stopped. Story 11. I was a kid when this happened, so keep that in mind. My great-grandmother had recently passed away. We were not very close, but whenever I visited my grandparents' house where she lived, she would always smile at me and give me a thumbs up. For some reason, that simple gesture always made me laugh and feel warm inside. One day after school, I was thinking about her and her thumbs up. When I got home, I ran downstairs, and halfway down, I tripped. At the bottom of the stairs, there was a gate, and the ceiling above was only about 7 feet high. The gap between the top of the gate and the ceiling was maybe 4 feet. Normally, tall people had to duck at the bottom step to avoid hitting their heads. I should have either hit the ceiling or crashed into the gate, but instead I landed softly on the ground. My first thought was of my great-grandmother giving me a little smile and a thumbs up. It felt strange but comforting. I was young then, and maybe I just had a wild imagination, but even as an adult, I clearly remember that moment. It remains one of the most vivid memories I have. Story 12. Years ago, I stayed for several nights at a hotel in the New Forest, a national park on the south coast of England. The hotel was a large former hunting lodge built in the 19th century. From the start, I felt very uncomfortable in my room, almost as though there were others there with me or someone watching me. I am not normally the kind of person to have such feelings, but they were overwhelming and unsettling. I was with a large group, and after the first night, when I spoke to others, many of them said they had felt the same way. That first night, it took me a long time to fall asleep. For the first time in my entire adult life, I could not bring myself to turn out the lights before going to bed. When I finally drifted off, I had the most vivid dreams of being in a trench during the Great War, hearing the constant banging of explosions and artillery fire. I woke up drenched in a cold sweat, deeply distressed. I also heard a banging noise, which I assumed must have been some loose metal roofing moving in the wind. I had never felt anything like it before or since. It felt completely real, overwhelming me with fear and emotions I could not explain. I could not get back to sleep. I felt like I was not alone, as if people were watching me, and I spent the rest of the night in a daze. In the morning, when I went downstairs for breakfast, I noticed a frame on the wall with photographs and a story about how the hotel had been converted into a military hospital during World War I. I had known nothing about this before arriving and had not been reading or watching anything about the war at the time. I am a practical and skeptical woman, but I still do not know what to make of that experience. I spent the rest of my stay sharing a room with a friend. The oppressive atmosphere and the sense of something being wrong never lifted, and my friend also admitted to feeling frightened and was glad to have me stay with them. Story 13. This was only scary because I was there. In a single day, I had two close calls with elephants. First, while on safari, our guide stopped in a clearing. As I was getting out of the vehicle, he panicked and told us to get back in. At that moment, an elephant burst into view, trumpeting and charging. The truck failed to start once, then twice, then a third time. Finally, on the fourth attempt, the engine turned over and we tore out of there. It turned out we had parked between a mother elephant and her calf. We spent the rest of the day laughing nervously about it, because what else could we do? Later, on the path to our camp, we came across a bull elephant that was clearly intoxicated from eating fermented fruit. Elephants have learned to knock the sugary fruit down, let it ferment, and then return to eat it. This bull had clearly done just that. We ended up spending about 3 hours being false charged by him. We could not move because if we did, he would have realized we were not just a strange green rock, but something he could attack. We also could not hit the gas, because the truck was not very fast in reverse. It was a long day for everyone, and I especially felt bad for our guide, because this safari was his first day back on the job after 2 years of recovery from being gored in the side during a previous elephant charge. Story 14. Probably my entire life could count as one disturbing story. My mother and grandmother were always extremely protective of me as a child. I grew up forbidden to visit friends or relatives, walk down the street, go outdoors alone, cook, or even drive. As I got older, it only got worse. At 19, my mother still forbade me from having a job. She told me I already had everything I needed with her and that I did not need money. Eventually, I decided enough was enough. I secretly saved up what little money I could by doing laundry, finding spare change, or taking coins here and there. I had to hide it well, because if she found it, she would take it, saying that all money belonged to her. One day I packed my bags and tried to leave. She actually tackled me to the ground and dragged me back inside with my grandmother's help. She reported my phone stolen, took it away so I could not make calls, and even slept beside my bed to make sure I did not sneak away. She once took me to a church meeting and had people pray over me for hours, claiming I was possessed. No one helped me because she had convinced them I was the one who needed help. On another attempt weeks later, when I had actually gotten a bus ticket, she recruited a cousin to trick me. The cousin claimed she wanted to talk to me and then locked the car doors after I got in. They drove me back home, and I was kept isolated for an entire year before I could finally get real help. Some relatives even parked their cars in the driveway to keep me from leaving. Story 15. I was in my room sitting at my computer, working late at night as usual. At some point, I had to use the bathroom. Since I was staying with family, I tried to be as quiet as possible so I would not wake anyone up. To reach the bathroom, I had to make a left-handed U-turn through the hallways. I had been visiting this house for years and had done the same midnight walk many times. That night, I went out the door, made the first left turn, walked a few steps, took the second left turn, and entered the bathroom. I turned on the light, finished my business, and then switched it off, choosing not to turn on the hallway light so as not to disturb anyone. I started making my way back, feeling my way in the dark. Then suddenly I thought I saw a shadow move. I froze and listened intently but heard nothing. I took another few steps and again saw what looked like a shadowy figure moving toward me, directly toward me from the door of my room. Panic set in. Each time I took a step, the shadow seemed to grow bigger until it felt inches from my face. I considered calling for help, even at the risk of waking everyone, because I was so terrified. Finally, as I reached for the door handle, my nose bumped into something hard. It turned out to be the mirror hanging on the wall next to my room at a 90-degree angle. I had become disoriented in the dark and missed my second right turn. What I thought was a shadowy figure moving toward me was just my own reflection all along. Story 16. I never thought I had anything creepy to share until I remembered something that happened to me. It started around my sophomore year of high school. I began receiving strange texts and phone calls, but I did not think much of them at first, since prank calls were pretty common back then. The messages and calls would come consistently for a few weeks, then stop, and I would forget about them until they started again. By my junior year, the calls had become creepier. They would come through both my house phone and my cell phone. At that time, cell phones were just becoming popular, so while some of my older friends still had my house number, I no longer gave it out. When I started dating, the calls even reached my boyfriend, telling him terrible things about me and sometimes referencing where I was at the moment. This caused tension between us, but just like before, the calls would eventually stop. Fast forward to college. I distanced myself from high school friends, deleted old social media accounts, and wanted a fresh start. But halfway through my freshman year, the calls and messages returned, with even more personal details about my life. Each time they stopped just before I reported them, and I would eventually forget again. By my sophomore year, I had moved into an apartment with three other girls. One night, the texts started again, but this time they threatened to create fake photos of me to send to people I knew. I tried ignoring them, but each time I blocked a number, the text came from another one. I became paranoid and decided to change my number the next day. I stopped trusting anyone except my boyfriend, isolating myself from friends and slipping into depression. I sometimes thought it might be someone from high school, but I never had proof. A few months later, I was at a concert with my boyfriend. He got drunk, and we had a fight. That night, while I was staying at my parents' house, the landline began ringing around 2 in the morning. One call after another came from men asking for explicit services. We eventually unplugged the phone. The next morning, I had to explain to my parents what had been happening for years. We filed a police report and changed our landline number. We later found out that someone had posted my number on Craigslist, claiming I was involved in things I never was. That was when I started connecting the dots. My boyfriend had been the one constant through all of these incidents, and the timing of our fight seemed like too much of a coincidence. It took me several tries to leave him because he was manipulative and I had grown dependent on him, but eventually I did. It took a long time to heal, but later I met a wonderful man who is now my husband. I told him about my past, but by then I was distant enough emotionally that we were able to move past it. Unfortunately, about a year ago, I began receiving strange texts again, this time suggesting I was cheating on my husband. The timing made it clear the goal was to cause conflict between us. We filed another police report, naming my ex-boyfriend as a suspect, changed my number again, and limited who had it. Since then, I have not received any calls or texts. The detective tried to reach my ex, but never could. I believe he realized this time I was serious about legal action, and he stopped. Looking back, I see just how manipulative and disturbed he was. I may never know how far his stalking really went, but I am simply grateful to be out of that relationship and healthy again. Story 17. I was going out with two of my friends one night, and we decided to walk to a bar. About a quarter of the way there, we realized it was too cold and decided to grab a cab. There was one parked at the Royal Farms nearby, and the driver seemed to be napping inside. We tapped on his window and he motioned for us to get in, so we did. He pulled out of the lot straight into the wrong lane, driving against traffic, and began weaving back and forth in an S pattern. Luckily, no cars were coming from the other direction. We asked him to stop and let us out, but he kept going. At a red light, my friends jumped out, but as I slid across the seat to get out, the driver suddenly took off, running the red light with me still halfway out. I held the door open with my foot, terrified that if it shut, he would lock it and I would be trapped. I screamed while my friends ran after the cab, throwing whatever they could at it. The driver swerved and smashed into about 8 parked cars along the street, dangerously close to where my leg was braced in the open doorway. At the next red light, I managed to scramble across and get out through the driver's side door, just as the light turned green. He sped off immediately after. My friends had managed to get a blurry photo of the license plate, but it was too unclear to give police. My leg ended up just badly bruised, but I still do not know if they ever caught him. Without question, it was the scariest experience of my life. Story 18. When I was 13, I experienced what I believe was the ghost of my grandmother. She had died in her sleep while napping on the living room couch. Afterward, according to my father and grandfather, they would sometimes hear her making the same trip she often did while alive, from the bedroom to the kitchen, opening the refrigerator door. At first, I thought they were making it up to tease me. A couple of years later, my father and I went to spend the weekend with my grandfather. We slept on the same living room couch that my grandmother had passed away on. My grandfather went next door to play poker, while my father quickly fell asleep beside me. I stayed awake, reading a magazine. After a while, I heard the sound of the back bedroom door opening, followed by shuffling feet. I heard the floor creak in front of the bathroom doorway, then more shuffling, and finally the refrigerator door opening with a clink of glass bottles in the door. Feeling thirsty, I went to the kitchen, expecting to see my grandfather, but the kitchen was empty. That was when I remembered my grandfather was not home, and I thought about the ghost stories my father and grandfather had told me. Terrified, I ran back, leaped over my sleeping father, and buried myself under the covers. At some point, I drifted off to sleep, only to wake up suddenly, overwhelmed by paralyzing fear. I lay frozen on my right side, with my blanket over my head. I saw the shadow of a head and shoulders, clearly outlined with a beehive hairstyle, just like my grandmother had always worn. I heard heavy breathing from the shadow. Summoning courage, I pulled the blanket off my face, and instantly the fear, shadow, and sound vanished. I covered my head again, but it happened repeatedly throughout the night. Each time I woke up paralyzed with fear, saw the shadow, heard the breathing, and then found nothing once I uncovered my face. It must have happened a dozen times or more. The next morning I told my father everything. Instead of dismissing me, he smiled and said, "That was Grandma." Story 19. As a kid, I suffered from awful nightmares almost every night, along with occasional night terrors. I rarely slept more than 4 hours. From a mix of sleep deprivation and paranoia, I often saw things out of the corner of my eye, though usually nothing was really there. Once, however, while walking down a hallway late at night, I turned and saw something. It was tall, smoky, and wispy, with a silhouette that looked like a shadow person. But what froze me were its eyes, bright, solid, and yellow in the darkness. I had never felt dread like that before. Years later, my father told me something that made my skin crawl. Our church had once told him that a being with yellow eyes was tormenting me. I had never told him about what I saw. Eventually, the nightmares stopped, and I grew up and forgot about it. But a few months ago, I took my younger sister to a midnight horror movie. On the way home, we talked about creepy experiences, laughing them off. Then she told me that when she was younger, she used to see shadowy figures too. I laughed until she went on to say that once, while homesick from school, she was watching television in broad daylight when she heard something in the hallway. She turned, and standing there was a tall, smoky silhouette with glowing yellow eyes. That night, I had a very hard time falling asleep. Story 20. During the 1970s, before I was born, my dad worked as a trail guide in California. He led groups of tourists on horseback through mountain trails. Over time, he became friends with a Native American man who started out as a regular customer and later joined as an employee. He never shared why he left his reservation, and my dad never pressed him. One day, my dad, his brother, and their friend were guiding a group when someone shouted, "Coyote!" and pointed to the valley. Coyotes were common, but this one was different. Its legs were unusually long and thin, its snout extended several extra inches, and it walked oddly like a camel. My dad brushed it off as a deformity, but his friend fell silent, staring at it, trembling. When my dad touched his shoulder and asked what was wrong, he whispered, "The tail, look at the tail." The animal had none. The group continued, and the coyote followed at a distance, never coming up the valley, but always keeping pace. Just before reaching camp, the coyote leapt into the path, startling the horses. It stared directly at my dad's friend and smiled. Not a panting grin, but a full, teeth-bared smile. The friend pulled out a small piece of wood marked with an arrow and showed it to the creature. The coyote looked away, then released a howl, deep and baritone, sounding like something drowning as it made one final cry. Then it ran off. At camp, the friend refused to explain fully, only saying, "It killed them, and now it will try to kill me. The less you know, the safer you are." He gave my dad and uncle each a carved wooden arrow for protection. That evening, he drove away, and my dad never saw him again. My father often retold this story during camping trips. Sometimes he joked about it, but other times he admitted that on cold, windy nights, he thought he could still hear the low howl of that thing that was not a coyote. Story 21. I was home alone with my grandmother. I was her caretaker, since she had suffered a serious stroke a few months earlier that left her paralyzed on one side and unable to communicate verbally. It was Easter, and my mother and aunt had thrown a dinner, then gone out afterward, leaving behind a huge mess. By then it was about midnight, and I was bone tired but had just started cleaning after putting my grandmother to bed. In the past week or so, she had developed a new behavior. Sometimes when we put her to bed, she would start screaming a few minutes after the light went out, and when I went in, she would be sobbing and pulling at her hair in fear. Since she could not speak, I asked her yes or no questions to guide the conversation, but I was at a loss for how to help her. All she had indicated so far was, through pointing, that something up in the back upper corner of her room was scaring her. Through reaching for a photograph, that it had some connection to her deceased parents. Through kissing a crucifix, that it terrified her, especially unsettling since she had never been religious. And through an imitation, that it had a really large open mouth. But tonight she was quiet. I started cleaning the living room, and as I straightened up to put away a stack of towels that belonged in the kitchen, I heard voices. Men's voices, so clear that I instantly assumed I had somehow turned on the television in the deadbolted room on the far side of the kitchen. I picked up the remote and pressed power, but nothing happened. I walked a few steps closer, and the bathroom, built off the kitchen in this old house, was now to my left. I felt that prickling sensation I used to get as a kid, but I ignored it as the voices faded into the sound of water running in the pipes. I told myself I was just overtired. I went back for the towels, but when I returned, I saw papers lying on the floor that moments before had been on the table. Just tired, I told myself again. I replaced them and went to get some dishes. As I passed the bathroom, I saw a small man in a hat dancing in there. By now I was unnerved, but I told myself the dishes still needed doing. I shut the bathroom door and carried the dishes in. Then I noticed the television cable lying on the kitchen floor, right in the middle where I could not miss it, even though it had been in the deadbolted room. I placed it back on the table and began scrubbing the dishes, humming to show how in control I was. As I was scrubbing a casserole dish, I suddenly heard three sharp knocks on the sink bottom, as though someone crouched inside the cabinet was rapping on it with their knuckles. I dropped the dish experimentally to see if I had caused an echo, but I had already dropped it moments before with no sound like that. Pause, silence. I went back to scrubbing, more subdued now. Then the cabinet door swung open deliberately and hit my knee twice, with a pause in between. That was enough. I dropped the dish where it was, went into the living room, and repeated the Lord's Prayer until the prickling feeling left me all at once. My grandmother's room was on the far side of the living room, and I did not want whatever that was anywhere near her. Strangely, she never screamed at night again after that. Story 22. I grew up in a one-room schoolhouse. My great-aunt's husband's family had owned the entire hillside, a massive farm, and the building that became my house had once been used as grain storage and later as the schoolhouse. It shows up on a map as far back as 1844, but I have not been able to trace it further. When it was a school, one night a young boy tried to break in, probably on a dare or a bet from his friends. The window he was climbing through slammed down on his neck, breaking it instantly. Many years later, on my 17th birthday, I had five or six girls over for a party, and we decided to use a Ouija board. Immediately, we received a barrage of messages, so many that we had to grab a notebook to keep up with the letters. The board told us about a 12-year-old boy, and then said that he had always watched over me, because my smile reminded him of his sister Gertie's smile. The board then asked me to go into the library, which was really just a walk-in closet filled with books, and to open the window. I went in, but the fear that overwhelmed me was so strong that I ran right back out. Soon after, I researched my house for a school project, hoping to find more details. I discovered that indeed a boy had died at age 12, and that his sister's name had been Gertrude. Ever since then, every time I grab a book, I whisper an apology for not opening that window. But I also cannot help but feel angry at that boy, or ghost, if he is real, because he claimed to be watching over me. Yet my reality was grim. My mother was a cruel alcoholic, and her abusive boyfriend lived with us for 7 years. If the boy truly was looking out for me, he did not do much. I am not entirely sure whether I believe in it or not, but I still apologize to him whenever I go into the library. Story 23. My dad worked a lot when I was younger. He had taken a second job delivering computer parts on the weekends. And since we did not see him much, he would let me ride shotgun once a week. This two-hour trip with my dad was absolutely the highlight of my weekend when I was 7 years old. I woke up Saturday morning excited, getting dressed as quickly as possible. We had a tradition. As soon as we started the route, he would take me to a little EZ Mart. Every time I got a package of pink extra gum and one of those convenience store ice cream cones. On this particular day, I told my mom goodbye. But when I reached the threshold of our home, I was suddenly overwhelmed with fear. I started crying uncontrollably, begging my mom not to make me go. I remember the terror being unlike anything I had ever felt. My mom was surprised and said, "Okay, calm down. Nobody is forcing you." She went back into the kitchen to make breakfast, and I stayed home playing with my Barbies. Roughly an hour later, the phone rang. My dad was doing his mail route in an old Bronco too when he heard a noise in the back seat. When he turned to look, he saw nothing. But when he looked back at the road, he was about to hit a mailbox. He overcorrected, and the Bronco rolled three times, sliding across the road before coming to a stop. He left the accident bruised and shaken, with computer parts scattered across the highway. The passenger side, the side I would have been riding in, was completely crushed. The only thing they found in the vehicle was a pink package of extra gum. Story 24. When I was 16, living with my dad, I was getting ready for bed one night when it felt like someone sat down at the foot of my bed. I felt the weight settle and the mattress and box spring creaked. I was lying on my side, facing away, so I half sat up and turned toward the foot of the bed. In the dim moonlight shining through the blinds, I could just barely make out the outline of a hunched, shadowy figure sitting there. The shimmering effect from the light made it look almost like the Predator, but with shadows. I froze and all the hairs on my body stood on end. Not wanting to disturb whatever it was, I slowly lay back down, keeping my eyes on it. It was facing away from me, and it either did not notice me or did not care. After staring at it for a while, I pulled my covers up over my face and began silently crying from sheer terror. My adrenaline was racing, and I was more scared than I had ever been in my life. I do not know how long I lay there, but eventually I felt the weight lift off the bed. I sat still, listening for any sign of what was happening, too afraid to peek out from under the covers. A moment later, I heard the hangers in my closet jangle. I ripped the covers off, but whatever it was had vanished. Some clothes that had been hung up before were now lying on the floor. I have another story about living in that house if anyone is interested. It is not quite as dramatic, but at the time it was every bit as terrifying. Story 25. I'm usually late to these threads, but I have a story that shows how sometimes the true monsters are people. A couple of years ago, my boyfriend and I went on an impromptu road trip. We packed the car, brought our dogs, and drove north to the redwoods of Northern California. I knew the area a bit from childhood, and it felt adventurous heading out without a destination in mind. A couple of nights in, we met up with a friend of a friend. After some drinks, she invited us to stay at her house for the night. We happily accepted since it saved us money and the trouble of finding a motel or campsite. She lived in an old Victorian house. Normally, she had six roommates, including several men. But since it was summer, most were away. That night, it was just her, another female roommate, and us. We all hung out for a while before going to bed. Both roommates stayed upstairs, while my boyfriend and I, with our dogs, slept on a futon downstairs in a sitting room near the front door. The room had a fireplace and large bay windows that looked out onto a yard with thick bushes. We fell asleep quickly, but were woken by the sound of the old-fashioned doorbell ringing loudly. One of the roommates came down, opened the door, saw nothing, and went back upstairs. We thought it was strange, but shrugged it off. Later, the doorbell rang again. The roommate came down, checked again, and returned, this time clearly unsettled. She asked if we had heard it too. We told her not to open the door if it happened again, and we all decided the bell must be malfunctioning. She went back upstairs. We tried to sleep, but soon my dog began growling, a deep, serious growl I had never heard from him before. He loves people, even strangers. So this was unusual. We assumed he was reacting to the unfamiliar house and hushed him. I drifted off, but the next thing I knew, my boyfriend leapt out of bed, slamming his hand against the bay window and yelling. Right outside, pressed against the glass, was the face of a man staring at us. My boyfriend grabbed an axe we had brought for camping and chased him down the street. Whoever that creep was must have been terrified. The commotion woke the entire house, and we all stayed up the rest of the night, keeping guard. The most disturbing part is realizing that he likely had been casing the house. If robbery was his goal, ringing the doorbell repeatedly made no sense. He probably wanted to see if only the women were home, depending on who came to the door. The thought still chills me to this day. Story 26. I grew up on a property that connected to a game preserve, so my brothers and I practically ran wild in the woods all the time. Over the years, there were many times when I felt there was something bad in the woods. Not always, but especially at night. We also had an outhouse, so I had to go out there at night more than most kids. Flash forward to when I was about 14 or 15, I decided to collect some plants to make a terrarium. I walked back along the public dirt lane not far from the house, a place I often went with the dogs and climbed about 40 feet up the bank into our part of the woods. It was a gorgeous spring day. The sun was shining and everything looked beautiful. Then I realized I could not hear any birds. No squirrels, no sounds at all. Just silence. Suddenly, I heard a rhythmic tapping noise coming from further up in the woods. At first, I figured it was a woodpecker and kept looking for plants. But the noise only came when I walked and stopped when I did. It kept getting closer, and I rustled leaves on purpose, waiting to see the bird. But nothing appeared. The sound drew closer until it should have been visible, yet there was nothing. By then, it did not sound like a woodpecker at all. It sounded like someone slapping their thighs in rhythm. The dread set in, and I realized whatever it was had been messing with me just to get closer. My insides felt like they had melted, and I thought I was about to collapse from fear. I bolted through the woods and leapt off the 6-foot bank straight into the road. Somehow I knew I would be safe there, as if the road was a boundary it could not cross. Still, it followed me along the road, moving about 20 feet into the woods, until I came within sight of my house. I did not tell anyone for years because I felt silly, but one night I finally told my mom and little brother. My brother just looked at me and said, "Why do you think I stopped going back there? It followed me once from the other side of the road." Story 27. When I was a kid, my bedroom was in the downstairs rumpus room. It was spacious and I liked feeling independent, having the area to myself, but at night I always felt uneasy being so far from the rest of my family. I still remember a recurring nightmare I had in that room. My father had given me his hi-fi player, and he would put on a CD at night to help me fall asleep. It became routine. I listened to everything from Pink Floyd to the Stranglers before drifting off. One night, I woke up to the music being off, though the amplifier lights were still glowing and flickering. In a dreamlike state, I stumbled out of bed to turn the CD player off, only to be overwhelmed with a strange static sensation. It felt like the player was transmitting its frequency through my body, using me as an antenna. The feeling was like the most intense, painless pins and needles, and every hair on my body stood on end. As it subsided, I felt nearly paralyzed. I could move, but it took every ounce of strength to crawl back into bed. Once under the covers, the static seemed to take form in front of me, not visually, but as a dark and heavy presence. It felt shadowy, malevolent, and deeply unwelcoming. My instincts kicked in, and I decided the best option was to play dead, thinking, "This presence can't affect me if I don't respond." I stayed perfectly still, careful even with my breathing, until eventually I fell asleep. I had the same dream almost every night for a while. The odd part is that I never felt exactly threatened, more confused. It was as if some higher being had complete control over me, physically and orally, and all I could do was endure it. Story 28. A few years ago, my husband was working night shifts. He typically got home around 6 in the morning, and since his job was about a 45-minute drive away, I always knew when to expect him. One night, I decided to let my 2 kids watch a movie in my bed on the laptop. It was already fairly late, around 10 at night, so I figured they would fall asleep and just stay in my bed. I locked up the whole house, got everyone ready, and we started the movie. About 40 minutes in, I heard footsteps coming from the dining room. My bedroom is directly off the dining room, and with hardwood floors, it is easy to hear someone walking. I always leave the dining room light on for my husband, and my door was nearly closed, just an inch open to block most of the light. I assumed he had come home early, so I ignored it and kept watching. But after 5 minutes of hearing someone walk back and forth and not coming in, I decided to check. I paused the movie, told the kids to stay put, and opened the door. The footsteps stopped immediately and no one was there. I searched the whole house, checked every window, closet, and outside door. Everything was locked and in place. Then I heard a meow. Laughing nervously, I thought it was just my cat, until I walked into the kitchen to feed him and found him sitting outside on the back porch. The door was still locked. Just then, my husband called from work, 45 minutes away. He told me to make sure the house was locked up because a neighbor's home had been broken into earlier that day. At that moment, I lost it. I started crying, absolutely terrified. Story 29. I came home late one night when I was about 17. The rest of my family was already asleep, so I went to my room and did my usual routine, some homework, a phone call with friends, listening to music. A couple of hours later, I finally went to bed. Not long after, I was awoken by rustling under my bed. I assumed it was my cat and rolled over. But soon the noise came again. This time I lay perfectly still, listening closely, and realized it was coming from something much larger than a cat. Since we lived near the woods, my imagination went wild. Could it be a raccoon? A skunk? Even a coyote? It took me 5 minutes to build up the courage to look. Slowly I rolled over and peeked down through the gap between the mattress and bed frame. That is when I saw the scariest thing of my life, the hairy arm of a man. My heart raced and I thought I would vomit from fear. I wanted to run, but all I could think was that if I got out of bed, he would slash my Achilles tendon as soon as my ankles were within reach. Finally, I gathered the courage to leap out of bed and dash for the door. I was so terrified that no sound came out when I tried to scream. I bolted toward the stairs leading to my parents' room when suddenly I was grabbed from behind, a hand clamped over my mouth. Then came a whisper telling me to be quiet, and I realized I recognized the voice. It was a boy I had been on a few dates with. He tried to apologize for scaring me, saying he just wanted to see what I was like when I was alone. I was hysterical, crying, and told him to get out. Incredibly, he even asked me for a ride home, which of course I refused. My parents never woke up during any of this. Later I told them, but they dismissed it, saying he was a nice boy who made a bad judgment call. In hindsight, I know I should have called the police, but instead I just cut him out of my life. Years later, the memory still haunts me. It was truly terrifying. Story 30. This still creeps me out. As a kid, I had little to no supervision. My mom worked day shifts, my dad worked nights, and during the day he slept. That meant I could do whatever I wanted until mom came home. I usually got bored after hours of television and toy, so I would grab the home phone and retreat to my room. My fun was dialing random numbers to see who picked up. Sometimes I pressed too many buttons, sometimes I hit an actual number, and usually the person on the other end told me not to call strangers. But one day I dialed a real number, and a man answered. When I asked his name, he paused and said he was Santa. I was thrilled, gullible, and young enough to believe him. For 10 to 15 minutes, I bombarded him with questions. At first, it was harmless. Then Santa told me one of his elves had misplaced my address, and if I did not tell him where I lived, I would not get any Christmas presents. At that age, I did not even know my address. I remember crying, trying desperately to remember it. Eventually, I ran into my parents' room and woke up my dad, yelling, "Santa needs our address!" My dad was furious, snatched the phone from me. But by then, the man had hung up. From then on, my parents made sure I never touched the home phone again. Story 31. When I was a kid, I was left alone a lot while my mom spent nights at her boyfriend's house. One weekend, I heard a noise on the roof. I panicked, called my mom, and told her I thought there was someone up there. She brushed me off, said it was all in my head, and told me to just turn the TV volume up. So I did, but the...
Hey, everybody, it's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Footsteps didn't stop. This went on for months, and it only ever happened when I was alone. My mom thought I was losing it, until one night she heard it too. No one else ever noticed because you had to be on the top floor, and the house had to be quiet. She was finally convinced, but thought it must just be a mouse in the space between the ceiling and the roof. We set up mouse traps, they vanished. We set up rat traps, gone the next day. We set up small animal bear claw traps, and the bait disappeared without triggering them. We tried humane traps, completely cleaned out. We even set all of them at once. Nothing. Eventually, we found a hole in the roof and patched it up. One night, during a thunderstorm, I noticed my cat staring at the ceiling. I joined him, and my mom's boyfriend walked in to see us both staring up. He said, "I think the creature's trying to get out." Half drunk, he grabbed a bat in one hand and a bottle of Jack Daniels in the other, climbed onto the roof, and waited. The creature stopped moving, but he claimed to see its eyes, shiny, peering through a black mask. Turned out it was a raccoon. We eventually killed it, but the story didn't end there. Months later, I went up to my room and noticed my light was off, which was strange because I always forgot to turn it off. I flicked it on, and there on my desk was a gigantic raccoon. Another one, inside my room. I bolted for the stairs only to hear my mom and her boyfriend laughing hysterically. He was a taxidermist, and it turned out they had preserved the raccoon that had terrorized me for months and set it up in my room as a joke. For years, I kept it until I donated it to some neighbor boys when I moved out. They were thrilled to have it, but they never knew the story behind it. Story 32. When I was 8, my entire family gathered at my aunt's house for Christmas. Being a large Hispanic family, there were people everywhere. Every light in the house was on, music was playing on both floors, and the kitchen was filled with noise and commotion. Around 1 in the morning, the power suddenly went out. Darkness and silence fell over the house. After some debate, my uncle and I volunteered to go down to the cellar to check the fuse box. We walked through the kitchen, down the stairs, and into complete blackness. The small window at the far end of the cellar let in no light at all, since it was just as dark outside. I placed my hand on my uncle's shoulder as he guided me across the room. Suddenly, we heard movement ahead of us. We assumed it was rats or mice and kept walking. Then, after a few more steps, my uncle broke the silence to ask if I had just slapped him. I hadn't. In that eerie quiet, a slap would have been obvious, and I was confused. He insisted he felt it clearly. A few minutes later, we found the fuse box, flipped the switch, and restored power. Upstairs, the party continued like nothing happened. But my uncle kept complaining of a strange sensation on his back, like the prickling static of a limb falling asleep, except paired with the feeling of being slapped hard. When his wife checked, she found a large red handprint on his back, spanning across his shoulder blade and past his spine. The family grew uneasy. Given our culture's superstitions, it was quickly suggested that what we encountered had not been a rat or anything natural, but something demonic. To this day, I cannot explain how a handprint appeared on his back. I was right behind him with my hand on his shoulder, and I would have seen or heard anything near him. The fact that it was pitch black and we were completely exposed only adds to how terrifying that moment was. Story 33. This one is less creepy but completely terrifying in the moment. I live in a small town on the High Plains, only a couple of thousand people, but still right in town. Our screen door doesn't lock, and if the main wooden door isn't shut, my dog will sometimes dart out after the squirrel she's obsessed with. One day home alone, I heard her bolt outside barking. Expecting the usual squirrel chase, I went out only to see her barking at the base of a tree, not at a squirrel, but at a bear about 15 feet up. Shocked, I tried to carefully grab her collar so I wouldn't spook the bear. I was less than a foot away when the bear suddenly jumped down, nearly on top of me. I felt its fur as it brushed past me before running into the backyard, my dog chasing after it like she was fearless. The bear wasn't aggressive. It clearly just wanted to escape, but the backyard was mostly fenced in and it couldn't find a way out. I was terrified it would feel trapped and swipe at my dog with one of its massive paws. For what felt like forever, but was probably 5 minutes, I chased my dog while she chased the bear. Finally, I managed to herd the bear through the fence opening. Looking up, I saw trucks lined along the street and neighbors pointing as the bear sprinted away.